Our next speaker is Jorge Santos Alves, who is an assistant professor at the Faculty of Human Sciences at the Portuguese Catholic University in Lisbon.
I'm delighted to join you in this workshop on Behind the Sea. And well, I have to also to thank all the organizers of this amazing initiative, but let me highlight the role that Rowena has done. I mean, she's been absolutely amazing, giving us all these systems and all the, keeping us updated on everything. So, around the to the point, to my presentation. So actually I'm going to talk to you about the Pahang and Euro-Asian businesses partnerships in Southeast Asia and the South China Sea. And I will focus, as I threatened to do that, on my abstract, on the case of the failed 1520 treaty between Portuguese in Malacca, actually, and the Sultan of Pahang. So let's proceed right away. Let me tell you that this is the, on the cover of my PPT, you have an image of the manuscript kept in Togo Tombe in Lisbon that basically is the instructions given to the Portuguese ambassador back in 1520 to his mission, his diplomatic mission in Pahang. So let me move forward. So just, a very brief bibliography that I would like to share with you, but it's actually some of the things that you may consider, seeing, just to trying to line up some of the most important references that perhaps you find useful to see, and those that I use to support my presentation here this afternoon. Okay, so topic number one, it's the presence of Pahang in Portuguese archives. So just give you a very brief overview of what's going on in terms of the, clear about this. Actually, research, and in-depth research still remains to be conducted in Portuguese archives. I mean, from what I've seen from the experience that I have in dealing with Portuguese archives, actually, there should be several dozens of documents on Pahang and Pahang's relations with the Portuguese, with other European in the area, but also with other states in Southeast Asia, which is, of course, something that I would like to highlight, because, most of those documents, of course, they have to do with the Portuguese presence, expression, trade, politics, diplomacy, and so on and so forth. But honestly, from my point of view, the most important things that you may find on those documents have to do with the political, diplomatic, and economic and social life of Pahang itself. So actually, that is basically the perspective that I would like to highlight on this case. Well, let me also point out two key cases of documents. Well, the first one that you may find an image on the left side of the slide, it's actually the peace agreement between Sultan Alauddin Riayat Shah of Pahang and the representative of the King of Portugal, Spain in 1614, that according to my Toledan friend Ana Delgado, the oldest known Islamic seal from the Malay Peninsula. The second one, and let's now move into my presentation, it's actually the instructions, or as we used to call it in diplomatic terms, the terms of reference to the Portuguese ambassador to Pahang in 1520, that will be, of course, the central topic of this presentation. That document is actually in deposit in the National Archives in Lisbon, and the those are the earliest instructions given by a Portuguese ambassador to a Malay state, which is something not to be neglected. So let me give you, first of all, briefly the context. So actually, in terms of the context, some chronological references, 1511, of course, the Portuguese conquest of Malacca, that in a way, reshaped the region's power balance. And of course, you have to consider several main players. Of course, Siam, and China, let's not forget China, Bintan / Johor, the Sultanate of Aceh on the northern tip of Sumatra, Patani, and of course, Pahang. The economic agents and networks, we should not overlook the overseas Chinese, most of them coming from the southern provinces of China, so Guangdong, Fujian, and Zhejiang areas. The Tamil merchants, basically most of them Chettiar caste, coming, of course, from the Tamil Nadu area, from the South India, the Javanese, and traders coming in from Luzon on the northern part of the Philippines. The main commodities, of course, are spices, gold, forest products, and what we nowadays call delicacies. And let me stress what the documents, both the Chinese and the Portuguese documents, really show for the early, let's say, up until the mid-16th century, is that actually the Southeast Asia passing through Pahang most of the times and going into the Chinese markets was actually a very profitable trade with an average tax that were some even sometimes more than 200% of profit, which is of course absolutely amazing from several points of view. So the one of the things that I would like also to just to end up the context part of this presentation is that it's not very common in the early 16th century to have the names of actual traders, especially Asian traders, that we can find them both in Chinese documents, for instance, and also in European documents, namely in Portuguese documents. So it's absolutely amazing that we can identify and in a way try to almost highlight and try almost to follow their CVs, their biographies, in terms of their the role that they play in society, in economy, in trade, and even in politics, in Malacca, or in Patani, or in Pahang, or even in China sometimes. So let me start by highlighting two Filipino, as we would say now, Luzon merchants, so Ariahana de Haja and Surya de Haja, that both of them have a very strong ties with Pahang, although they've been based basically in Malacca during the end of the Sultanate period, but also during the early stages of the Portuguese presence there. Two Chinese family of tycoons, of magnates. So, first of all, the Shula Daoch was one of the brothers of the Chu family, and Lin Jian, that was actually very influential. This can be also taken from Portuguese and Malay sources in Pahang in the early 16th century. Let's see now a little bit the evolution of partnerships between the 1530s and the 1550s. Actually, first of all, the collaboration with Portuguese merchants and officials in Malacca. Let me do a footnote, a very brief footnote. When we talk about the partnerships between those Asian merchants and the Portuguese officials, we are basically talking about illegal trade or smuggling, because actually it was forbidden for the officials to be involved in any kind of trade except the official trade by the Portuguese crown. And of course, those trading networks were extremely active, and they extended to the Fujian, Zhejiang, and Guangdong provinces in China. Although, let me also say that the port of Canton or Guangdong, Guangzhou, was actually the most important one. Now let's look, and I think that I was able to, in a nutshell, bring you the context. Let me, in a way, also try to present you what's going on with this failed 1520 Pahang Malacca Treaty. First landmark in terms of chronology, 1540, it's actually the initial informal agreement between Sultan Mansur Shah from Pahang that, in a way, agreed to pay tribute in gold to the King of Portugal, as, by the way, other sultans from the neighboring areas of Malacca, from the Malay Peninsula, and even some of them from the island of Sumatra, actually paid tribute to the King of Portugal. But let's also be very clear about that. This is basically a very symbolic relation that was established between those monarchs and the King of Portugal. And then in 1520, we have the Pahang Embassy coming to Malacca. Negotiations failed, apparently. That's what we get from the Portuguese documents, at least, because apparently the envoys lacked official mandate. So one of the several question marks that I have in my presentation is, perhaps, were they truly ambassadors, credited by the Pahang Sultan, or actually they were merchants acting as Pahang's ambassadors, as most of the times happened in Malacca, by the way, also in China. Actually, we have a new ruler in Pahang in 1519, so Sultan Mahmud Shah, and the Portuguese diplomacy from Malacca, of course, sought to restore the relations right away. And we know also that there was clearly a lobby from Chinese merchants in Malacca. By Chinese, I mean, of course, the Chu family and several others. So generally speaking, the large overseas Chinese community we find in Pattani, in Malacca, but also in Pahang, trying to press for an agreement with Pahang. The overseas Chinese merchants, that is clear. Perhaps also some Tamil were present in the 1520 Portuguese embassy to Pahang. So this is also very clear that, let me stress this, actually some overseas Chinese were involved and participated in the Portuguese embassy of 1520. What were the main terms of the treaty that the Portuguese ambassador tried to sign? First of all, that the Sultan of Pahang would pay an annual tribute in gold to the King of Portugal. That the Portuguese from Malacca would pay, would give military aid to Pahang against the Sultan of Bintan. That the private traders of Pahang, Portuguese private traders in Pahang, should be expelled immediately. That there should be tax exemptions for Portuguese ships officially doing business in the name of the King of Portugal in Pahang. And that Pahang vessels would be encouraged to trade in at Malacca, sending in goods like gold, pepper, and provisions. There was also a kind of a secret term to the ambassador that he should be trying to seduce Chinese and Indian merchants settled in Pahang to relocate to Malacca. And allow me to end up this slide, a linguistic note. The document uses the word Malay, Perniagaan, which means, as you all know, trade, and uses the Portuguese version of that word, Perniaga, that, by the way, still used nowadays in Portugal. And as far as I remember, it's one of the very first times that this Malay word appears in a Portuguese document referring as to trade. So, at the end of the day, after the failure of signature of the treaty between Pahang and Portuguese Malacca, the treaty then was unratified, and it developed a series of naval tensions between Pahang and Portuguese Malacca. There was, in a way, kind of a collapse of formal diplomatic and trade official relations between the Portuguese crown and the Sultan of Pahang, but that, on the other hand, led to the emergence of private Eurasian commercial partnerships since the 1520s up until at least the 1540s, if not a little bit more further in time. A few features of this kind of new Euro-Asian trade totally out of the control of the Portuguese crown. First of all, it was financed clearly by overseas Chinese and Tamil money. This included Portuguese private and official actors. A reference, the name that you find here, Estevão da Gama. Actually, this guy, he was not only captain of Malacca, but he reached the top of the hierarchy, becoming the viceroy of the Estado da Índia. So actually, there was clearly people engaged in legal and illicit trade with southern China, Zhejiang, Fujian, and Guangdong area. So Pahang worked as a kind of a nodal center of hybrid trade networks. So actually, again, don't forget that actually this kind of partnerships, in a way, was a kind of a mirror that the Portuguese were doing, repeating a little bit what had happened previously when the Sultans of Malacca or the Sultans of Pahang invested in partnerships with foreign merchants, some of them coming in from Luzon, some of them were Chinese, some of them were Tamil, but this is my favorite case, the case of the Tuan Bandan, a Bengali businessman established in Malacca for a very, very long time, actually even resisted the conquest of Malacca by the Portuguese. So basically to wrap up, and before my chair, our chair write me a message. So at the end of the day, trying to wrap up things, what five topics on the historical significance of this 1520 terms of reference to the Portuguese treaty. So actually enduring Pahang's role in global trade dynamics. The 1520 failed treaty marks a turning point in early Eurasian diplomacy. It reveals the flexibility, let's call it the fluidity, a word that I prefer, of local political economies in responding to European arrival, and of course the reinforcement of informal and private networks that replaced official diplomacy. And this of course highlights, that's the whole purpose of our colloquium, right? Pahang has an amazing and fascinating case study. Thank you so much.
Thank you. Thank you, and thank you also for keeping the time. I appreciate it.